Hello and welcome to another Nerding Out with That Nerdy Catholic. I'm Seth Payne. As Cesar and I said in our last episode, we're taking a break off from recording for a retreat that we're going to be on. But I still have some episodes that I wanted to share with you. There are two episodes that were recorded a couple of years ago that were never released. I'm going to be releasing one of them today and another one in 2 weeks. This first episode is an episode that I recorded with John Mark Grodi on the question, what is real and what is truth? And we're going to be looking at the relationship between philosophy and science. John Mark Grodi is a coworker of mine at the Cummingham Network. You can check them out at chnetwork.org. John Mark is the director of the organization, as well as the host of The Journey Home on EWTN. And so we hope that you enjoy this conversation. Before we get into it, I want to remind you that if you head over to thatnerdycatholic.com, you can sign up for our email list and get updates on when we put out new episodes and new content and any updates that we have. I promise we're not going to send more than 2 emails a month. That's about how often we release our episodes. If you head over to thatnerdycatholic.com/merch, you can get t-shirts and mugs with Nerdy Catholic and Nerding Out logos on them. Show the world that you are a nerdy Catholic, that you love science and that you love, and you want to seek truth. And that's what we're here for. If you are watching this on YouTube, we would really appreciate it if you would like this video, subscribe to our channel, and share these videos with your friends. And if you listen to this as a podcast, we'd really appreciate it if you would rate this episode and this show in your podcast app of choice. Without further ado, let's jump into this conversation with John Mark Grodi.
3, 2, 1. Welcome to Love Machine.
Welcome to another Nerding Out with That Nerdy Catholic. I am Seth Payne, That Nerdy Catholic, and we have again with us John Mark Grodi.
Hey, hey.
My friend, coworker, and fellow nerd. Mm-hmm. And today we are talking about unicorns.
Yes.
Or anything else mythical. I guess we could say mythical beasts, to quote our good friends Rhett and Link. We love watching Good Mythical Morning. But especially because we are both dads.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a parent, you know that your kid is going to come to you at least once a day.
You didn't know that till you become a parent, that this parenting, one of the prerequisites is have a degree in philosophy, right?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
Your kids ask you all these really deep questions.
Yeah So I'm reading The Hobbit to my girls right now, and so they ask me, well, are hobbits real?
Mm-hmm. And my kids have asked whether unicorns are real
or
this, that, and the other is real. And obviously, I was telling you, before the show, that the philosopher in me likes to complicate things.
Right.
It's not wrong of any of us, practically speaking, to respond to kids, oh, no, because we know what they're meaning there. Mm-hmm. We say, no, unicorns aren't real, it's just in the story. And that's not wrong.
Yeah.
It's true in a colloquial, practical sense of what they're asking. But also an opportunity to get really nerdy philosophically.
I think also kind of stepping back,
yeah.
I think it's also really interesting to think about when they ask that question, mm-hmm. the purpose behind it. Because sometimes it's, hey, Dad, are unicorns real? Mm-hmm. Like, oh my goodness, unicorns are awesome. Yeah. I would hate it if unicorns were not real.
Right.
On the other hand.
Which zoo can I go see them in?
Yeah. On the other hand, they sometimes ask, Dad, are dragons real?
Mm.
It's like, what if there's a dragon under my bed right now?
Right.
So there's the fear. So there's the desire for something to be real, and there's a desire for something not to be real.
Right.
But in both cases, you have to, you have to look at the situation. Well, what am I going to say?
Yeah.
I'm going to say.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's, like I said, there's so many leaping off points. I think a few in particular come to mind, and let's make sure we hit all these three. Don't let me forget them.
All right.
Number one is this question of there's different senses of the word truth and reality.
Mm-hmm.
There's literal historical truth, the question of whether there's actually a unicorn you can go see in a zoo. But there's also the sense of like, you know, is the story, is this fairy tale true? Mm-hmm. Well, fairy tales are true in a symbolic sense. Mm-hmm. They are telling truths about humanity. They're telling truths about our universe, even if the names and the facts are changed. They're still telling a kind of truth. So kinds of truth. That's mm-hmm. one thing we're going to talk about. Different senses of truth. Number two, talking about the distinction between logical possibility or impossibility, mm-hmm. and then what we might call physical or natural possibility or impossibility in terms of our universe, and then natural improbability, we might say.
Right.
Those are important distinctions because, again, there are things that we can try to imagine that are not possible in any universe, like mm-hmm. 2 + 2 = 5. And there are things that we can imagine that aren't possible in our universe, but we could imagine in another universe, like, blue grass.
Or there could be a horse with a horn coming out of its head.
There's nothing logically impossible about that. There's not even anything physically impossible about that.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. So senses of truth, possibility and impossibility. And then the third one was, dang it, I'll remember it.
Improbability?
So, no, I'll come back to
okay. it. Yeah. Okay. Well, and also to think, you know, as you're saying about fairy tales being mm-hmm. true in some sense, mm-hmm. you know, are we in a story? I mean, I think, you know, one of the big questions when kids are asking that is there something real here as far as, you know, what they're going through, mm-hmm. you know, and one of the things I've realized when you look at the world through just a scientific lens, it is so easy to get caught up in all the little details mm-hmm. that you don't realize that there's a bigger picture. You know, last week when we were talking about, you know, the What If series on Marvel, you know, that there is a purpose, that when you're looking at this idea of a multiverse, that you're kind of saying, well, anything can happen, and therefore there isn't a larger story that's going on. Mm-hmm. But when I read any good story, you know, like The Lord of the Rings, we talk about a lot, mm-hmm. you can see that there is a story that's going on and that these characters are part of it. Mm-hmm. And when I step back and say, you know, like as we quoted last week, the verse, all things work together for the good of those who love God right. and are called to his purpose, mm-hmm. that we are part of some story. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't know the ending. We really have a hard time even knowing our current part in it, but mm-hmm. we can know that we are part of a story.
Right.
So thinking then about this story that we're in, mm-hmm. you know, we look at then, well, what is possible? Mm-hmm. You know, what is impossible in any situation?
Right. Yeah. And those kind of questions bring it up. Again, we have a colloquial way of speaking, but we can dig under the surface a little bit. You know, when you ask, are unicorns real? Okay. So again, as I mentioned earlier, there's a few senses we can think about the possibility or impossibility of something. Or sometimes my son has a habit of saying, what if, we talked about mm-hmm. what if that last week, what if such and such happened? And he'll describe, mm-hmm. you know, a ridiculously impossible scenario. And I'll be like, I don't think that's going to happen, buddy, because he's really wanting it. He's, his heart's in it. But of course, he's gotten this habit of saying, yeah, but it's not impossible. It could happen. Mm-hmm. And I have to admit, logically speaking, you're right. There is nothing logically impossible about this eventuality you're talking about. And again, there's important philosophical distinctions here. I think Chesterton talks a lot about this, maybe in Orthodoxy, but about there's a big difference between talking about the rules of the particular fairy tale that you are in right mm-hmm. now, the rules of our fairy tale, the physical laws of the universe, the physical constants that sort of determine the way things play out on mm-hmm. a physical level. There's one thing, it's one thing to talk about those rules and laws about this universe. It's another thing entirely to talk about the possible rules and laws of a different universe.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing logically impossible about a horse that has a horn in its head. Mm-hmm. There is something logically impossible and incoherent about the idea of 2 + 2 = 5. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because that's a logical relation. The relationship between two and two and the logical relation that's implied by plus and by equals, and then the logical relationship between two, the concept of two and the concept of five, they disqualify the possibility that 2 + 2 could equal 5, even in a very different universe. Because it's not talking about something in the universe. It's talking about the relationship between logical concepts. And so too, a married bachelor is logically incoherent.
Right.
You can't imagine a universe with a married bachelor, because in the definition of bachelor is an unmarried man.
An unmarried married person is...
It's just...
nonsense.
You know. So basic law of non-contradiction here. A thing cannot be at the same time and in the same respect.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute. I'm sorry. Let me say that again. A thing cannot be and not be
right.
at the same time and right. in the same respect.
Right.
And so there's logical possibility or impossibility. And then there's what we might call like physical or natural possibility or impossibility mm-hmm. in terms of our universe. We say, given what we know about our universe, its logical or its physical laws,
mm-hmm.
We can sort of guess, you know, the things that could be possible or perhaps ruled out by the laws of our universe.
Right.
Now, again, a unicorn, unless you're getting into the magical side of it, I don't know what magic is sort of attached to the idea of a unicorn. Yeah. But in terms of a horse with a horn in its head, that's got maybe like a pink mane or something like that. There's nothing even physically impossible about that. I mean, one could imagine a what-if story, a just-so evolutionary biology story that, you know, after a bunch of ridiculous circumstances, you ended up with a horse.
We know that flamingos have
pink there we go.
Feathers because of what they eat.
Yeah, you know, really?
Flamingos are born gray, and because their diet consists of shellfish— a certain kind of shellfish, that it's the minerals that come from the shellfish that turn their feathers pink.
That's bizarre.
So
that's a fairy tale.
there could be horses that eat a certain kind of shellfish,
mm-hmm.
and for some reason, it's only their mane that turns pink.
Right.
You know? Right. But for me, thinking about the what if,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially when you put aside the logical impossibility,
mm-hmm.
there's a humility to say, I don't know.
Right.
And that's hard for a parent to say a lot. Well, you know, I don't know.
Right.
There's a pride in saying, you know what? I understand everything. I understand the world. I understand mm-hmm. what can and can't be. Therefore, you know, that's wrong.
Right. Yeah. And again, we do speak colloquially, and there's nothing specifically wrong with that, but there is a sense in which our sense of scientific smugness, you might say, in thinking that we've got the facts locked in, we've figured it out. We know what is or isn't out there. It does go way too far, and not in the sense of, scientists necessarily specifically looking at their data, but in terms of how that trickles down into the individual consciousness of the person on the street. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're all the time seeing people on the internet saying, well, science says X, Y, and Z, or, you know, I believe in science, which all that means is kind of a pompous way of saying, I'm just right.
Right.
You know, it's circular. It's
or saying, you know, I believe in science there because I don't believe in all this hocus pocus religious stuff.
Right. And all you're doing is you're just saying I'm right because I'm right because I'm right.
Right.
You're not appealing to any specific evidence. You're not proving why your side is the side of science. I mean, there's always another scientist out there who mm-hmm. will refute. And I recognize this is these days it's all very political because we're dealing with a lot of scientific issues in our culture today. But again. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make it better that on the level of the individual, we're very, very quick to appeal to certainties that do not exist. You know, even our scientific laws, even our scientific conclusions are just probabilities. Mm-hmm. They're just aggregates of data.
Yep.
They're always working hypotheses, you know, that are right until we find more data that either disqualifies them or elaborates, that brings some greater subtlety. Yep. And so, you know, scientists have to do science, and that's good, and we want them to. We need to be careful not to slip into that science turning into us a presumption of knowledge where there's not knowledge, a presumption mm-hmm. of certainty where there's not certainty.
Right, right. And especially with so many of the issues that we're dealing with right now, especially with around the pandemic,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, you have— it seems on one side you have like, well, this is what the science says and this is certain. And then you have on the other side, it's like, well, I don't believe in the science, therefore I'm going to do whatever I want.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you have to realize that, yeah, science is not certain.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, if a group of scientists have gotten data mm-hmm. and say, you know what, we're not 100% sure, but this is what it's looking like.
Right.
So let's do what we can to mm-hmm. be as safe as possible.
Yeah.
Then you have this side over here. You know, you need to say, okay, well, going back to what we talked about last week, what is the prudent thing to do?
Mm-hmm.
The prudent thing is not to, one, say, I am certain, and therefore you have to listen to me. It's also not to say, you know what, you're not certain, therefore I don't believe anything you say.
Right.
You need to take the data that you have and try and be as prudent as possible.
Yeah. And this is a real issue with public trust and, you know, the way that communication, that information is aggregated and explored and then communicated.
Mm-hmm.
There is a real issue, again, if we're using these two directional sides here, the people you described over here, if they, and I think this is often the case, if they're consistently over-exaggerating their data
mm-hmm.
in terms of, again, as in a public discourse, everyone's saying, the science says, the science is clear.
Mm-hmm.
At times when it's not, and overstating the case, again, that creates this greater swing between yeah. sides, you know, because
yeah.
when people cry wolf, or when they, you know, when people try to use, again, using science in public policy is always such a difficult thing, because science by its very nature is not something that gives you a perfect certainty.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're trying to use science to convince people of your side, there's always a difficulty there in the sense that you're setting up a false relation,
yeah.
you know, between we are certain of this and the science says so. Well, that's not the way science works.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, to keep the health of our public discourse and our ability to trust and our ability for as a society to explore data, aggregate it, communicate it, there has to be a real humility and honesty all the way down that chain so that yeah. the people who actually receive it can trust more that people are going to state when there's a greater yeah. certainty or a lesser certainty, and they're not going to exaggerate those to try to get compliance.
Yeah, and then the more that one side says, well, the other side is not going to trust me no matter what, then I just need to be more certain to make them trust me.
Right.
Instead of being more open and honest,
more transparent. Yeah, I mean, like, yeah. I mean, if you so that's the whole thing, right? If you give people honest data, then you're also giving them the chance to choose and to discern for themselves. And that's, I can understand why there might be a temptation, you know, by people in leadership sometimes to keep the narrative very simple because they want mm-hmm. compliance. But again, now we're getting.
But
the point is that like science, you know, data.
What if the scientists came and said,
our language is powerful.
Unicorns are in fact real.
Well, then I'm gonna go to the zoo then, I guess. We've created a unicorn. Yeah.
But I think, but that brings in, you know, to this question of what is real.
Mm-hmm.
How do we respond to it?
Yeah. Yeah. So there's another side of that, as we mentioned earlier. You know, it's just thinking about the different senses of the term real, the term truth, right? We, mm-hmm. most of the time these days, when we're talking about truth, people are wanting to talk about truth in the sense of historical, literal events.
Yeah.
That's what they're meaning. And, yeah. and, you know, in an unfortunate sense, some people, their view of reality has narrowed such that that's the only thing that's real.
Yeah.
Events are the only thing that's real.
Yep.
So things that happen are the only things that are true and real. So when we say, is X true, mm-hmm. all that we mean is, does it correspond to some event in the timeline, so to speak,
yeah.
in this
yeah.
timeline? Versus, well, certainly that's a kind of truth, that physical truth of, you know, this cup is on the table. But there's other kinds of truth, yeah. too, that are not yeah. less true.
Yeah, one of my, in my list of top 10 movies, one of my favorite movies, I think it's right around a five, number five, is Contact.
Oh yeah.
And so we have the main character is this scientist who, you know, she is the ultimate scientist.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, you know, and because of trauma that she had as a kid, it's kind of formed her in this mindset of, you know, you need to prove it to me
mm-hmm.
for me to believe you.
Mm-hmm.
And so Matthew McConaughey plays this character who is he was going to be a priest, but then he wasn't. But he's got this kind of spiritual outlook on the world. Mm. But my favorite scene in the movie, where he is trying to show her that there's more truth than what can be proven scientifically. Mm-hmm. He sits down with her. He says, did your father love you? And you know, her father died when she was young. And so it's a hard, traumatic point in her life. But he says, did your father love you? And she said, well yes. And he looks at her and he says, prove it. Mm. So in looking at her and saying, prove that your father loved you,
right,
is showing that there are things that you cannot prove scientifically, but we know mm-hmm. to be true.
Yeah, Aristotle's very simple, single syllable word definition of truth is to say of that which is that it is, and of that which is not that it is not. I think those were all single mm-hmm. syllable words. Very simple definition. Yeah. And certainly that applies to, is there a cup on the table? Yes, the cup's on the table. That is true. But there's lots of other things that are true. Mm-hmm. and not just things that we would believe in from a religious supernatural perspective, but again, we were just talking about logical possibility here. 2 + 2 = 4. Is that true? Mm-hmm. There is no thing in the world. There's no event that corresponds to. That's referring to something that is not in reality in the sense that this cup is in reality, but it is true. We would never hesitate to say that is true, to say of that which it is that it is.
Yeah. Right?
So there's that kind of truth too. There's also, again, truths of that are a little deeper than the physical things. The truth of are you Seth Payne? Because what fact in reality corresponds mm-hmm. to you are the person Seth Payne?
Yeah.
Because you're just physical stuff, right? Is there a truth to your identity? Is there a truth to, again, you use the concept love, justice, these kind of, there's a truth to those things. It's a different kind of truth than physical objects, but it is truth nonetheless.
Yeah, I've watched actually an odd number of videos recently talking about the concept of the ship of Theseus. Mm-hmm. When does it stop becoming being the ship of Theseus? Mm-hmm. They've replaced every single part. When think about that biologically, our cells are constantly being replenished. I think the number is every 8 or 10 years.
Yeah.
Every single cell in your body is not the same as it was 10 years earlier.
Right.
So in 10 years from now, will I cease being Seth Payne? Am I not Seth Payne now if I was 10 years ago?
Yeah.
So how do I know that I am Seth Payne?
Right. And some of this can sound like word games. Sometimes philosophy can begin to sound like that. And whenever it does, it's good to step back and just return to our experience. However we want to call it, we don't want to get too caught up in the word games. But the mm-hmm. reality is, we certainly walk around as if there is a subject matter about which we would talk about truth or untruth with regards to identity, mm-hmm. with regards to values.
Yeah.
And another point here too about this is that I want to enter this term into the dialogue: intersubjective verifiability. Sometimes we constrain truth to what is intersubjectively verifiable. In other words, if we have a scientific experiment that can establish that this cup is on the table, well, we like scientific experiments, physical scientific experiments, mm-hmm. because they establish intersubjective verifiability. We both can see this. It's out there. It's objective. Right. Great. Yeah. There are lots of other kinds of truth that are not, by their very nature, intersubjectively verifiable, like the truth that I am in physical or emotional or mental pain. The fact of that, and the extent of that, and the quality of that, is just not a part of reality that you will ever have access to. Mm-hmm. It is just impossible by the nature of the thing.
Yeah.
Is there a truth or falsity to it? Can I make statements about it that are objectively truth or false? Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm really the only one who has access to that.
Right.
My physical, emotional states.
Right.
So again, we need to be wary, though, of this modern urge to reduce all of truth that we talk about, that we even discuss, to things that are intersubjectively verifiable. If they're not intersubjectively verifiable, yes, we're dealing with the kind of stuff it's a lot more subtle. It's mm-hmm. a lot more theoretical. It's not as simple as, I can bang out an experiment to prove this or disprove this.
Yeah.
It involves language. It involves discourse.
Yeah.
But it's still a subject. There's still subject matters about which we can talk reasonably.
I've had a number of conversations with Dr. Brent Robbins mm. who's a professor of psychology. And talking to him, you realize that our emotional health, it's tied to physical things. Mm-hmm. It's tied to things that are going on in our body that we can observe, mm-hmm. and we can do things to treat. But that there's also an emotional, a mental, and even a spiritual side
right.
to our emotional and mental health that we need to take an account of. And, you know, what's one of the things that's interesting when I talk to him is he knows so much of the history mm. of psychology. Mm-hmm. Looking at, you know, one of our latest episodes, we talked about the development of psychology in 19th century France, mm-hmm. and kind of following along with the birth of this modern secular mindset worldview in France, where at the beginning or early in the 19th century, there was this understanding that there is a spiritual and aspect to psychology. Mm-hmm. And as you get closer to the end of the 19th century, there is this desire to say, no, it's just physical. Mm-hmm. It's just biochemical. Mm-hmm. At some point in our past, we did live in a world where if something went wrong with you, well, it must have been demons. Mm-hmm. There's some sort of possession there. Mm-hmm. And this growing understanding of the biochemical part of it led many people to say, okay, well, all of that spiritual stuff must have just been what we were making up right. to explain what was happening biochemically.
Right. Yeah.
And so, in talking to him, he's getting back into this area of research where, no, it's a both and.
Right.
Yeah, there are biochemical issues that are happening and we need to treat those. But at the same time, there are emotional, mental, and spiritual aspects to issues that they're dealing with.
Yeah. Yeah, they're different layers of reality, and that doesn't make them exclusive. I was just thinking, as you were talking too, you think about, a lot of mental health, if you go talk to a counselor, some of what they'll do is they'll have you talk through your problems and they'll have you examine the narratives in your head. Like, when this happens, what do you tell yourself? How do you interpret this situation? Mm-hmm. Whenever this happens, I tell myself X, Y, and Z. Now, the telling myself, even that narrative, perhaps that's, stored, biochemically in our neurons. That's certainly, it might be an aspect of it. So there's that physical side of it. But our choice of whether to affirm or to set aside and pilot a new narrative, that comes down to our choice.
Yeah.
So all that is to say, it's a very complex reality. It involves our body. It involves our mind, whatever our mind is in terms of its whole phenomenon. It involves our emotions, whatever those are in the totality of their phenomenon. It involves our will in whatever the totality of that phenomenon is, body and soul together, that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
The point is, truth and reality are complex.
Yeah.
And we need to resist without evidence, we need to resist the philosophical temptation to always default to reductionism.
Mm-hmm.
That everything is less than it seems. Rather, well, why not more? Why not the more complex reality? Why would we think that reality is not complex and nuanced? Yeah. That itself is a philosophical presupposition that shouldn't remain unexamined.
Well, and as I said, the video that I saw recently talking about, am I me?
Right.
If my cells keep replacing themselves, does that mean I'm just reduced to the cells in my body?
Right.
Am I anything that's more than even just my physical presence?
Right. So there's different senses of truth, just in terms of the nature of reality or in the nature of a story. Is when a kid asks, is this person real? Mm-hmm. Do they mean, is he historically real? Do they mean, is this a real? Well, they don't. Yeah, they're usually, that's what they're asking.
Yeah.
But we can also talk about a different sense of truth there too. You mentioned in the beginning a really good point, which is that behind the question, are dragons real or are unicorns real? There's the question, there's the thing on the surface that the kid wants to know, like, am I going to see a dragon when I go out and explore?
Right.
Am I going to see a unicorn? So there's either a hope or a fear there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with us colloquially saying, no, there aren't dragons, no, there aren't unicorns. with the mental, you know, tangent that I'm speaking sort of haphazardly here because I don't know. I haven't been everywhere. I haven't been to every planet. I haven't been to every universe. With all that said, though, behind the question certainly is that hope or fear. Mm-hmm. And we can answer the surface level question, but we can also dig deeper and get into the hope or fear because that gets into another aspect of truth. Are dragons real? Well, part of what they know is danger real?
Mm-hmm.
Am I in danger?
Yeah.
Are there monsters that want my life? Are there people? Are there villains that want to kill me?
Mm-hmm.
And that is true. That is the nature of the universe. Evil does exist.
Yeah.
Chesterton has a famous quote that is often misquoted, but even the misquote, I think, closely approximates enough the original quote. And I'm going to misquote it now too. Basically, you know, that fairy tales don't teach it. The important thing about fairy tales is not that they teach children that dragons are real in the sense of you're mm-hmm. going to go out and see one, but that they can be killed.
Yeah.
And what that's pointing to is that fairy tales really are teaching us about our world, even if the names and the events and the timeline is different, right? That's all fictional, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's true in a different and perhaps more important sense, you know, that evil is real. There is evil in men's hearts. There's evil in the world. You're going to encounter evil, but also you can conquer it through the power of good. You can make good choices. You have free will. You're in a universe governed by a provident God. You know, those are non-scientific truths about our reality
mm-hmm.
that are underneath the questions that we are asked. Yeah.
And actually, last week, I put out a video with one of the guests on the journey home. Mm-hmm. He was talking about Tolkien.
Yeah.
And the Lord of the Rings. And the topic of the video was that redemption is possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that every single character in the Lord of the Rings, except I would say probably Sauron, every single character has a possibility of redemption. And so when our kids are asking these questions, going to that deeper level, well, yes, you know, there are evils in the world,
mm-hmm.
but there's also good in the world.
Right.
And the good is way much more powerful than the evil. And even the characters in the stories that we see as evil, even they have the possibility of redemption.
Yeah. Yeah. So on the fear side, you know, the dragon side, but on the other side, the unicorn side, going back to, you know, where the discussion came today, that's a really important one too, because especially I think when a kid asks about a unicorn, they're not just asking, hey, can we go get ice cream? They're asking about something that's kind of beyond their grasp. And mm-hmm. what they're asking about, you know, emotionally, they're asking about, is there something that really fits this yearning in myself for fairy tale, for transcendent beauty, transcendent goodness, something that really does seem to be out of place in this world.
Yeah.
And it is right that as children and hopefully as adults that never stop being children in this sense, that we get nerdy, right? We fall in love with things in the world, coffee or the MCU or a great, you know, the Lord of the Rings, a great story that we fall in love. And this is coming out of Lewis, his bicycles essay, right? That we fall in love, we become enchanted, that we experience disenchantment when we recognize, man, I love that thing, but this in this universe, it's not all it's cracked up to be. You know, bicycles get flat tires and they're kind of annoying after a while. You know, like they're not what I thought they were when I was a kid. Or, you know, this the things we fall in love with, they turn out to not fully fulfill us the way that we hoped they might, even mm-hmm. when we find them in this universe. But the possibility is of this re-enchantment, which is recognizing that it aroused in me a hope for something that is not in this world.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason why I have that hope for something that is out of this world. And that's a good thing. That does help us to understand our nature as human beings. And it does help us to keep looking. It's good to be restless because there it really ultimately is only one reality that'll qualm that restlessness, that'll fulfill that hole, and that is God.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, thinking about this concept of being, this idea that we are in a story.
Yeah.
That there is a purpose behind everything that happens. And that there is an end of the story that is going to be so much greater than we can imagine. And I, having a very nerdy outlook at heaven, you know, if we're going to be in heaven for eternity, you know, I don't think that I'm going to be sitting there with a little harp kind of just strumming and getting bored after 100 years. We have an infinite universe, possibly even multiverse, who knows, but an infinite infinity to explore. You know, God put in our hearts a creative yearning because we are made in his image. And I often wonder how creative, I mean, if we are this creative now in our limited time on earth with our limited resources, how infinitely creative are we going to be? And what can, you know, what are the things that we can explore? So then think about that question for my kids. Are unicorns real? Well, I've not seen any unicorns on this earth, but let me tell you, I'm sure that there is going to be something, if not unicorns, something infinitely more amazing when we get to heaven,
right,
than unicorns, because, you know, we have an infinitely creative God that created us in his image. And if we can be creative enough to imagine unicorns,
right,
what amazing creative things are we going to discover in heaven?
Yeah. No other animal does this. No other animal goes around yearning for things that are impossible,
yeah,
transcendent, beyond it. It tells us something about ourselves, that we have a yearning for something out of this world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, was it Lewis that said, if hunger proves that there's food, then our yearning for something greater proves that there is something greater.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's been an interesting concept, an interesting conversation. And, you know, we started off talking about this episode thing. Well, let's just ask the question, are unicorns real?
Yes.
And as good nerds, that always brought us to a long and interesting conversation. And, you know, this is proof that you can nerd out about anything.
Yes. This conversation may not help you answer your children's questions, but hopefully it'll help you be a better human being.
Yeah. And you know, kind of as we talked about last week with the what if question, you know, hopefully this will help you to think about what is really real and to seek out the truth, whatever it is. And if you're someone that does not like to think about the possibility that there is a God, that maybe this question will help you really seek the truth no matter where it's going to lead you, even if that is to a God that you don't really want to think about right now. So, well, John Mark, thank you for joining me again. And thank you for joining us today on another Nerding Out. I want to remind you, you can head over to Nerdy Catholic Tees. That is the other little nerdy part of this little nerdy empire that I'm building here. But Nerdy Catholic Tees, you can get shirts like this. Read Chesterton is a great reminder. Everyone should read at least a little Chesterton in their life. But if you go to nerdycatholictees.com, you can get that and another a bunch of other designs there. If you use the coupon code ThatNerdyCatholic, you will get 10% off your order on checkout. And share this with all of your friends. Hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, and that little bell's magic. It'll let you know whenever a new video goes up. But if you have a friend that has had questions like this, or just, you know, you want to share the beauty of this immense truth that we live in, please share this with them. So thank you for joining us again. We'll see you next week. God bless.
Thank you again for joining us on this episode of Nerding Out. We hope that it was a thought-provoking episode, and this question of what is real and what is true is one of the things that we want to explore and in these episodes and all the episodes that we do of Nerding Out. This idea that the world that we live in is bigger and it is more expansive than what we can just see and touch and feel, that what we have learned through the physical sciences is amazing, and it shows us the complexity and beauty of our universe. but that there is something more, and that is one of the things that we are exploring and seeing how all of these things fit together. So I'm really glad that you joined us today. I want to remind you, if you go over to thatnerdycatholic.com, you can sign up for our email list to get updates on when we put out new episodes. You can go over to thatnerdycatholic.com/merch to get your latest swag with, you know, Nerdy Catholic and Nerding Out graphics on them. We'd really appreciate it if you would like this video, subscribe to our channel if you think that we've earned it, and share this video with your friends. If you listen to this episode as a podcast, we'd really appreciate it if you would comment on these episodes and rate our show on your podcast platform of choice. Join us again in 2 weeks for our second unreleased episode. We'll be talking with Holly Ordway, author of Tolkien's Faith, a Spiritual Biography, and diving deep into the world of Tolkien and his imagination and the worlds that he created. Join us then. Until then, God bless.
System shut down.